I was hoping I could sit down, but I'm not going to be allowed to sit down. Welcome. Shall we pray? And then I'm more nervous about this than just about anything that I've been asked to do on this. Oh dear. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you call us to yourself despite all of our failings and our brokenness. And as we think about the way in which we might effectively minister to those with special needs, we pray that you would teach us again of the grace that you extend to us, and therefore the grace that you would have us extend to others. Please guide our discussion for Christ's sake. Amen. So I want to
begin by saying that I feel as though I have profoundly limited credentials to be doing this. You can leave now if you like and sort of go and find a better seminar somewhere else. I've thought of three reasons for me to do this seminar. One is that we've got a gifted couple in the church where I'm working at the moment who I think have done some great work with some children with special needs in our church, and I've tapped them for wisdom. Much better if they were here, but they're not. I've read one book. Got to be honest, which is this book called "Same Late, Different Boat," by an American woman called Stephanie Huback. Who has a child with Down syndrome and writes about the way in which she has ended up establishing a ministry for children with disabled needs in her church. I think it's good, actually. I've been very impressed by it. I'm pinching some bits from it. My wife read it a few years ago and copied it. And I suppose the third reason is that we've got, we've got two daughters, but one gifted a couple, one book, one daughter in particular, who is our youngest, Ellie, who's 13 and has profound and multiple special needs herself. So she is, she doesn't speak apart from a sort of a one word or two, mum, dad. She's doubly incontinent, so still wearing nappies. She didn't learn to chew. Her disabilities around her mouth are particularly sort of strong, so chewing and eating has always been very difficult for her. So she's, we still sort of feed her sort of mushy food, really. She's unusually sort of socially strong for children of her level of profound disability. So she has high levels of sort of, social skills in terms of empathy, and in terms of, and therefore a sense of humour is very strong. So she's quite fun to be with amongst children of her level of disability. At one level, she's quite satisfying to work with and be with because she forges relationships. She understands you. Her sort of her verbal understanding is, her ability to pick up what you're on about is really quite strong. But with that, I guess, goes high levels of frustration because she can't communicate. She can't let you know what she wants, what she's feeling, what she wants to happen. And so out of that, floods quite marked behavioural difficulties, and now that she's 13, if she decides she's cross about something, then that is now quite potentially quite tough, and so she sort of teeters sometimes on the edge of the special school where she is being able to manage her. So I bring that sort of background as a father, a parent. Of a child with special needs, being cared for in church. And I guess that's the main reason that I've got lumped with the seminar. I've never done the working. I've never been in your position of needing to try and care for children with special needs as a sort of provider. in that sense. So that's why I say limited credentials. And therefore also, I guess in some sense, limited aims. Stephanie Huback has set up this sort of disabled ministry. You know, you ought to get her over sometime. It sounds brilliant what she's done. Really fascinating. I just guess I'm hoping that we can increase our awareness of the way that we respond to special needs in our churches to share a bit of good practice. You may have loads more good ideas than I do to share with you. To raise our ambitions, I guess. I think even just reading this book and thinking it through, it's a funny position being pastor of a church in which people are providing wonderfully for our daughter and for one or two others with special needs. But it would be very odd for me to kind of sort of drive, form a really high class special needs ministry. But yeah, maybe that'd be a vision that God might give you in your churches, because I think there are great possibilities in this area, which we might think about. There were some handouts, weren't there?
Just do a little survey. I mean, it'd be dull to do it on your own. Why don't you do it in pairs or something?
How many children have you got altogether in your children's work, your youth work? How many of those have special needs, of any sort, right across the spectrum? Physical disability, learning difficulties, whatever. How many are there? With special needs, and then particularly perhaps sort of zero in, what I know most about because of Ellie is children with learning difficulties. How many have got learning difficulty? And we might sort of think mild, moderate, and severe. Just in pairs, just sort of jot down, just exchange your...
Where are you drawing the boundaries of special needs? Because
they're pretty vague. Well, they are. Anyone who's got a need that is special. In that sense, your own definition, really. Somebody who you have identified, they've got a special need that we're trying to meet. Good. You just do that very quickly. I'm just interested to know. And actually, I'll tell you what, at the same time as doing that, this will speed things up. At the same time as you do that, why don't you just in pairs scribble down what are the issues? Why have you come to this seminar? What do you want to know? What are you struggling with? What are your issues in this field? Do you want to just do that in pairs, and then we'll just take some ideas. let's get an impression then of what that's.
I hate this microphone.
Let's get an impression of how many you've, how many children with special needs you have, and what issues are around. Should we just whiz round and just get an idea of, you know, be interested to know the percentages. If so, that might be quicker than sort of, you know, roughly how many you've got.
Not more than 1 in 40.
1 in 40. Well, you should be doing the seminar.
It's always, I suppose, one particular child I'm thinking of in a group of probably ranges from week by week to 18 to, you know, 22 or so.
Yeah.
That's 6 children, about
108. Yeah, okay.
But we've also similarly got another group of special.
Right. We must share. I mean, let me try and make sure we get time to just sort of hear how you've set that up. I'm sure others would love to know how you've done that and what your trials have been. So let's make time for that.
Actually, we haven't had anything to do with
it. Oh, you've not had anything to do with it? Okay. Retreating quickly.
But it is interesting because it is parents within the church of children who have
Okay.
So
okay.
Quite an interesting story.
All right. Well, let's hear a bit of that story. Just whiz through quickly. Otherwise. Okay, yeah.
6 or 7 in 30?
Not
1 in 30.
Yeah.
1 in 60 currently.
Yeah.
4 in 70.
6 in about 200, but I reckon there's lots more. Yes, number thing to be public.
Yeah.
There's a couple that are very clearly have difficulties in Elvin we work with. There's probably a few more dyslexics in.
Hasn't
really popped up particularly.
Phil.
We had one 25-year-old who'd been up what he's 25 now, had been hanging around in our youth group for quite a while. And in our children's work, I was interested when I turned up at the church because we've got a group of about 5 or 6 kids out of 30 children that I was teaching who were the difficult children in a special group, but when the leader's been away and we've had them, there's actually only 1 or 2 who I'd say.
Yeah.
2 out of 15.
15.
3 and 45.
Yeah. Okay. So it's an interesting spectrum, isn't it? And what are the issues? As you know, let me just
very quickly get out of the way.
I find it very hard actually to track down decent statistics. It was interesting. How do you define a disability? What's a special need? I think you know, a 1 in 20 children have a disability. There was another figure that I came across, which was 20% of children, extraordinarily, is with special needs. I mean, so where's the definition? And then you looked into it, and actually, you find that a large chunk of that is asthma. Yeah, it's a special need to do with asthma. And so, yeah, it's actually quite hard to work out what these stats mean unless you really track them all the way back. So, you know, 1 in 20 have a disability. Fascinating increase, isn't it? 62% over the last 25 years, which I think is largely due to both better recognition and also to medical advances that mean that children that would normally have died in infancy or neonatally are being kept alive. And then going on to develop special needs. 1 to 2% of all children with a learning difficulty. And again, I worry about those stats. My guess is that probably is excluding lots of the mild dyslexia. and not, you know, and there's a sort of fuzzy boundary there. Families with children who have special needs, 25% lower income on average. It's quite striking, isn't it? Higher rates of marital difficulty and divorce, certainly. Gross discrepancy in terms of mums going out to work, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think 16% of mothers with children with special needs go out to work, compared to 61% as a national average, which is interesting. Flip over. Absolutely, which goes hand in hand with a lower income.
It's partly that, it's also partly because you can't work and get carers' allowance.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Why bother with this subject? It just seems to me because it's very easy to miss children with special needs. Either we just don't see them. Or having failed to see them, they stop coming. We'll talk about that in a minute. It's so easy for families to give up because the demands, the difficulties. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this in our experience of keeping going with just pitching up at church, never mind everything else, is so considerable. More positively, why bother? Well, I think it's possible to make a huge difference. And again, I'll talk a little bit about this from our personal experience, to the families of those with special needs by providing even a fairly limited sort of response, never mind a really good response. Just shout out some of these. Yeah, shout out. Just tell us. What are the issues that trouble you, the things you would love to get wisdom from one another on? Some ideas?
Disruptive behaviour, behavioural things is often, that's where I think a lot of children with perhaps special needs slip through the net, when we don't know, either we're not told about them by the parents, even though perhaps we ask.
Yeah.
You can sort of spot them, but unfortunately it is the disruptive children, children who cause others to be distracted, that you spot.
So
visible side of things for us anyway.
Handling the disruption, thank you.
Dealing with the fear factor in other parents and children.
Yes.
Yeah, how do you educate the children and the rest of the group to deal well with that individual, given that individual doesn't doesn't relate well with the rest of the group or the leaders or the discipline?
Could you just scribble some of these up, just so that if we get towards the end and we've not dealt with them, we remember to come back to them. That's really helpful.
How much do you give one-to-one contacts? How much do you move what goes on to
screen? Yes.
Those kind of issues.
Yes.
And differentiation of the materials. I mean, there's no room to do that.
Yeah.
Do you do that? Is that what I need to do?
Yes.
How do you move the group?
So how to tailor a sort of, you know, a package. Principles behind that. So we'll do a bit of that. Any others?
How do you just include them socially? So even when you're playing games, how do you involve with that?
Yep. That's very helpful.
It's a fear of the volunteer leaders as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the feel, the label, yep.
Following on, from what those guys are saying, just to what extent, like integrating them with the group when you do it, when you take them out.
Yep.
And also, in a small church environment with limited volunteers, how much do you provide for potentially one child with special needs?
Yes.
Group without?
How much to invest your resources when they're limited? Yep.
In particular, time as well. I've got a child who's basically just struggled with attention, I think, who could do with being taught very differently in my children's group to the rest of the guys. Now, I could teach either group, but when I've got 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Most of that's games. How do I best use my time?
I think when it's a physical issue, people worry about sort of the whole sort of health. I mean, what do you do if someone suddenly has a fit, or, you know, the whole medical side of
a
lack of knowledge and training, really.
Yes.
And how do you support parents?
Yeah.
The 25-year-old I mentioned, his mum is on benefits because she's a full-time carer. Her husband left her because of him when he was born. How do you support her in that? She's a struggling Christian with all kinds of pressures.
And also, how do you convey the gospel to a child that struggles to understand language?
Yep.
Given that we want them to come to Christ, just presumably you tell them the gospel, but just how do you do that?
That's enough.
Nobody can read it. I can't write it. So I can read it. I'll translate.
Here's the way I'm trying to do it. I'm going to throw out some principles, not many, mixed with lots of practical examples. We'll try and leave some time for discussions and questions. So it's you know, it's a bit of a kind of melee of ideas, and I hope something useful come out of it. Stolen from Stephanie. I found this very helpful. So let me just give this to you quickly. She highlights three different views of disability. This sounds a bit theoretical, but I think it does speak into one of the two things that we've just been thinking about. And she distinguishes between what she calls the historical kind of modernistic view of disability, which is, as she describes it, disability is an abnormal part of a normal world. Okay, there is normal, and disability is abnormality. Okay, there is a if you follow that, and that therefore leads to an attitude that says we the normal view ourselves as superior, and they the disabled are therefore inferior, and the thrust that comes with that is inevitably a measure of exclusion and stigma associated to abnormality. The attitude that this sort of whole mindset will tend to produce is of fear and or pity. If help is offered, then it will be sort of on a basis of altruism, very good of me, the normal person, to provide help to this abnormal person, but that's altruistic, I'll do that. And the underlying aim is that things really ought to be fixed. Abnormality should be brought to normality. And so disability is often very frustrating because it's not fixable most of the time. Get that sort of mindset? Now, look at a different way, which would be kind of a postmodern way of thinking about this, which is that, given that there is no overarching truth, there's no sort of meta-narrative, all that sort of stuff that we've heard lectures on and we pretend we understand, everyone's story is valid. Well, you can see that from that perspective, well, you would say, well, a disabled person is just as valid as a able person. A disability is normal. It's just as normal as normal is. You see, if you follow the logic of that. And where that drives is a neutral view of self. I'm not superior or inferior to you. I'm just me and you're just you. That sounds a little better. But do you see that therefore means my attitude to you in your disability is also neutral? There's in that sense, there's no problem. You haven't got a problem, you're just you. So there is no expectation of a response to you, because you're just, you're just you. You're not you with an abnormality, as in the first worldview. And so the responsibility would be to say, well, we are all just, people, and so we should all just be together. And actually, this postmodern mindset will drive the inclusion policy in schools. which is predominant now, shift in the special needs provision away from special schools towards inclusion, keeping as many children with special needs in mainstream education as possible. And I'd never realised that this would come from a postmodern mindset, but now it makes sense to me. And the aim then is for sameness in the way that we think about and provide for disabled children. Yeah, as much as possible, they should get the same provision, they should be treated in the same ways, you see. And then she distinguishes that with what she calls a biblical view of disability, which is to say that disability is a normal part of an abnormal world. In other words, working with a conviction that the world is fallen and therefore ruined and broken. Disability is exactly what we should expect in our abnormal world. And that drives us, that just as I see myself as a valued individual created in the image of God, but broken by the fall, so I view a disabled person as a valuable person created in the image of God, broken by the fall, in a different way, perhaps in a more obvious way, a more noticeable way. But the attitude then becomes identification. I see the similarity between me and you. You know, fundamentally, you're not different to me in your disability. You are created in the image of God, and you know the damage of the fall, just as I do. But my responsibility, driven by the gospel, is to give compassion and grace and justice. And my aim is to value your difference. And to involve and include. I found that a really helpful sort of framework. I don't know whether it sort of makes sense to you. I mean, I found myself wanting to reflect on it over and over again and realising, I think that's the strength of the book. Oh dear, is that me phoning? Turn me off. Just press the left end button somewhere. Thank you. Yeah, red. So I found that a very helpful framework, and I think it's the strength of her book. I then found myself, which view do I really hold towards people with disabilities? Well, which?
I tend to hold the first one.
Yeah, I found that that's actually where I was as well, mostly, if I was honest.
At least initially. My initial gut response is the first one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know whether others. I mean, you're all going to feel as though you've got to be humble now and agree. But I agree with you. That's what I realised where I was. Okay, let's do a little bit of. First thing I want to talk about is removing the barriers. Remember the parable of the sheep and the goats. I didn't want to write it all out. The righteous answer Jesus, or in the parable, the king, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? The king will reply, I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. And that thrust of compassion and care for those in need, it seems to me, would drive us to say that there is an imperative upon us to care for the needy, to care for the marginalised, to look out for the poor and damaged. And it seems to me that if we are not providing that in our churches, then we're not being obedient to Christ. Yeah, if somebody turned up in our church in a wheelchair and there was no ramp, and we had to embarrassedly sort of turn them away from the door, I mean, you know, we would feel awful, wouldn't we? Yeah, it would just be one of those terrible cringe moments. We had a wedding. We have a church on the top floor, upstairs, and the lift had broken, and there was a wedding, and someone did turn up in a wheelchair, and it was just excruciating, because they had to sit at the bottom of the stairs, and listen to a disembodied wedding service. I mean, how awful, you know, I just couldn't, you know. But families with disability, I guess, are walking away from the front doors of our church, you know, far more than we have any idea, because they do not feel they're able to be in there. they don't feel they can enter into the community. It's invisible to us, but I'm sure it's happening. The first 9 months of the previous church where we were, so Ellie was about six. Yes, five or six. So she'd sort of, you know, she wasn't in creche anymore. But there was no way that the next group up, the sort of threes to fives or whatever it was, were going to cope with her. So Beth would go with her to the group, but actually that was more hassle than it was worth because, you know, Beth could see that was being disruptive and so on. So Beth took her to, you know, found another room and would go and sit with her in the room and just play with her. And of course, you soon begin to think, why? You know, I mean, actually it's easy to play at home because we've got toys at home and familiar territory and we haven't had to, you know, but, you know, actually she needed to come because she was the curate's wife or assistant vicar's wife, whatever it was. And it would be odd if she didn't come. And besides which, I couldn't look after the other two children, so she had to come. So she kept coming. And there was a nine-month period where, you know, that's all she ever did on a Sunday. You know, never heard a sermon being preached. And then the vicar, my good friend Mark Ashton, found Beth one day making her way into the room to go and sit with Ellie. For the sermon, and it dawned on him what was happening, and he galvanised people to respond and to change things. A shift took place, and some people appeared. Now, I tell you that story not to sort of, you know, play on your heartstrings, but just to say, if Beth and I, as articulate, you know, well-churched people, couldn't find it within ourselves to say, please sort this out for us. You know, because, you know, we couldn't. We didn't. And I don't think we're sort of, you know, particularly odd and twitchy. You know, it just a very hard thing to sort of say, you know, please give me the provision that we need, which is different to everybody else. So we didn't do it. And so I tell you that story just to, you know, just to try and put in your minds the vision of saying it's really hard for people to ask. Some people, I guess, probably banging on your door all the time and demanding huge provision, but, you know, I think there are people there who just, you know, don't feel able to ask. And I think that takes us into the whole business of communicating with parents. My first thing is, you know, do it. Do it early. Do it before you think that it is needed. Don't wait until there's obviously a problem, or, you know, you think, well, you know, probably I'd better do. Yeah. Get that conversation going early. Yeah. Even if it's not clear to you if there are special needs or not, you know, you can start a conversation by saying, you know, love to find out how Jemima is, you know, is finding, you know, being in our threes to fives group. You know, do you think she's happy? Is there anything that we could be doing for her? You know, and out of that may tumble, you know, glad you've come to talk because actually we've got problems with her at school and they're thinking about a statement and, you know, and it'll all come. So just get that conversation going early. But I just think we're slow. I think instead of asking, we guess. Instead of asking, we try and make a diagnosis. I think this child has got such and such. And just out of a sense of embarrassment, we don't just get out there and have a conversation with the parents. So you can see I'm making a big thing of this. I really think it's key. And there are certainly a group of parents with children with special needs who just don't want to make a fuss. And so I think, you know, we do need to take the initiative. Recently we had a family join us whose child's sort of on the Asperger's autism spectrum, and they were looking around at churches trying to work out where they thought this boy would best cope, and wanted to give the leaders a book on autism to read. Now, you know, you could sort of feel, who are you to sort of, you know, start dishing out books and, you know, blah de blah. But you've got to try and get inside the parents' heads and just think, you know, they are really struggling. You know, they're coming to terms with this diagnosis of autism. You know, they feel vulnerable, they feel exposed, they feel frightened. They know that things are going badly at school, the kid's getting bullied, and, you know, they want church to work. They desperately want church to work, and they are doing any, you know, whatever they can to make that happen. And, you know, your response to that, and I think this family only stuck with us probably because they ended up working with that lovely couple that I was mentioning at the beginning, who had developed some experience because of Ellie and another boy with Down syndrome in our church, and I think had a notion of how to respond, which I don't think they would have had a few years ago. And the other thing, don't forget to give feedback. So we have no idea what happens with Ellie at school unless the teacher remembers to write in a home diary book and it comes home with Ellie, so that we can have some notion of whether that was a happy day or a bad day, whether, you know, she did terrible things and hurt people, or whether, you know, she was a delight and everyone was very pleased with her. Now, that's in an extreme end. But even, you know, even at a much milder end, you know, a child with special needs, you know, whose sort of social awareness isn't very good, just, you know, the parents got no idea whether they were happy or sad in your Sunday school group. You know, whereas the other children in that group, you know, can reliably feed back. So think about that business of feedback. I'm going to whiz through these, I think, and then we'll take some questions and stuff. I think the set that I've just got these two main headings. So that's all about, you know, making it possible for parents and for families with children with special needs to get in, you know, breaking down the barriers, the limiting factors to just making that contact. And I think so much of that is about communication. The second thing I want to say is the distinction between involvement as opposed to provision. So that quote from Romans, you know, reminding us that we're a body with all sorts of differences, and each part needs to be valued. And I think I worry that with special needs, what we end up doing is thinking about some special provision. You know, here's the body of the church. Oh, someone with special needs. Okay, well, we'll take them over there and do something sort of special and distinct for them because they've got special needs. Rather than saying, how will we involve them in the body of Christ? You know, how will we engage with them? Now, with Ellie, the provision is pretty difficult, really. I mean, she's just too hard to manage on anything but a one-to-one. In fact, two people work with Ellie each Sunday in a room on her own, with some sort of planned activities. That's the level of input that is necessary for her to be looked after. So she is apart from her peer group. So it is a bit of a provision. And actually, thinking about this seminar has made me want to go back and think, you know, are there more points of contact? You know, more ways that we can integrate. But she's in the early part of the service, and she managed to sit through that. And it just occurs to me that even though the sort of the provision for Ellie is quite separate, actually all sorts of things have spun out of that as I stop and think about it. So there's another girl called Emily who is, how old is she? 7, 8 maybe, who is a special friend. She's taken quite a lot of abuse from Ellie, but Ellie loves her and she loves Ellie, and often she will come and sit next to Ellie and during the service, in the early part of the service, and that will help Ellie to stay. You know, otherwise, you know, she'll lose interest. But with Emily sat next to her, you know, Emily is the person who is making it possible for Ellie to be in there, actually, and Emily knows that. So, you know, there's a point. The group of people who work with Ellie get together for social evenings, to share ideas, to pray together. I didn't know that happened. Discovered it relatively recently. As they try and sort of think about the way that they're looking after her. A number of those who have got used to being with Ellie on Sundays have therefore gained the confidence to be babysitters for us, which, you know, we wouldn't have had. And you know, even if those people just babysit for us twice a year, that actually is a big impact in our lives. You know, not a big thing for them, huge impact for us. Similarly, one of the women who's worked with Ellie for a number of years offered to begin to have Ellie at her home for a couple of hours on a school evening. So she'll pick Ellie up when she arrives home from school, take her off. They've got a sort of very tight set routine, and it works. And so that's sort of 2 hours of respite that we wouldn't have. And actually, that's, you know, we've also discovered that sometimes there are surprises in who will help. You know, people who, you know, you wouldn't choose, you wouldn't immediately think of for your children's work, actually turn out to be brilliant at working with children with special needs. You know, I think about, you know, one man who probably is, I think probably does have special needs of his own, and, you know, is a bit so socially awkward. But he now works with a boy with Down syndrome, and it's great. You know, it's a win-win. You know, actually, I'm just going to go past that. I'm doing too much talking. Tim is 12 years old, Down syndrome. This is a boy in our church. He's got good speech, doesn't cope well in groups, been attending the group for 8 to 11-year-olds, but is becoming increasingly restless and on several occasions just gets up, rushes out of the group. His mum was on the point of not coming to church because it was so difficult to persuade Tim to come on a Sunday. You know, Tim would just, you know, just be clear that he's not really interested in coming anymore. So his mum was, you know, pretty much decided to give up. What ideas? Go on, just take a moment, give me a break. 2 minutes, just a brainstorm. So we're not allowed to say that anymore, aren't we? Blue sky think together. It's thought shower. Thought shower. But a brainstorm is non-PC anymore because of, yeah. Apparently. Just not that I take that seriously. Just ideas. Go on. Just what could you do? One might be helpful.
Yeah, so if it's not okay, maybe it's not, it could be 2 weeks before
he works. He's already got a one to one. There's already somebody allocated to him.
In the group or separate?
One of the leaders in the group. Groups are just a problem for him.
Yeah.
So he doesn't like being in crowds, doesn't like.
So we've got to do a
Yeah. So setting a clear routine, scheduling. That's a big thing, especially when it's giving a clear sequence of events. Child has not got any verbals, has not got reading or very good sort of verbal skills, you know, just a series of pictures showing the sequence of events to expect. Have we got to finish? What time is it? We've got to finish dead on 6:15. Okay. Any bright ideas? Just sort of, you know, share ideas, particularly those who've sort of worked with children with special needs, got special groups for them. Any ideas? What might you do? I'm not. There isn't one right answer. I'm just sort of, you know, brainstorming a bit. What his mum said was that he finds groups and crowds difficult, or always has. Finds them difficult at school, finds them difficult in all contexts.
So the idea of work would have small groups.
Yeah. And then immediately you're in the position, you're in the situation that, you know, how much do you organise your children's work around one boy? Yeah, I mean, there's a real question there, isn't there? So, but yes. Yeah, there's just some other ideas. Let's just sort of bounce.
There's a couple of things. I think a lot of it is to do with control and routine is important. So trying to create a routine that is helpful and is similar each week. So there's kind of control in that sense. But also I might put control into the boys' hands and say, look, if it's getting too much for you can have like a timeout card. You can go out for 5-10 minutes. Like, and maybe even pairing up with a friend. So if you go with a friend, just try and develop a relationship.
So, yeah, thank you. I mean, certainly that idea of structure. I mean, not true for every child with special needs, but certainly, it's a big thing within educational sort of approaches to children with learning difficulties is to give them very clear structure, give them clear sequence, perhaps reinforced by a series of pictures, sort of velcroed onto a board, and you can just point to which one you've got to. Perverse.
Yeah. We need to be really careful though that we don't lump autistic spectrum disorder in with Down syndrome. And the routine thing is very important for a lot of kids with autistic spectrum disorder. It doesn't necessarily make a structure. it might here, but we shouldn't assume that a child with Down syndrome is going to need structure and routine because a child with autistic spectrum disorders, Asperger's, whatever, will do. My own experience, and I've got two kids with Down syndrome, is that it'll make a scrap of difference, that there are other things that are important. So that doesn't mean to say it won't be useful, but you know, we just need to be a bit...
Yeah.
So from your experience there, one of the questions we talked about was the whole awareness that is with younger kids. What did you kind of think anything about that?
Sorry? It was just the reason we were talking about it was because we're wondering why he'd been held back in the year group below, simply because we wondered whether it would be a longer term benefit to have a peer group that he grew up with, who would learn how to love him and care for him, and if he's constantly going to just stay in a lower age group, all he's going to see is other children going past him, rather than staying with him and making friends.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they're very good questions to ask.
Very, very supportive, and he would come and he'd say, you know, what have you enjoyed
sort of thing, they say, do you think you might like to go and visit the youth group? Shall we go together? Shall we have a look? And she said, no. Until one day she said yes, and they went together. And, you know, although that sounds really sensible, it sounds more sensible, doesn't it, for them to be with their own. It seemed to work well in that case. I think
the fact that it's all individual, I think, is very important, and to reinforce. Yeah, I think where we had failed Tim in this case was that our communication with the mother had eased off, you know, and we'd not been sitting down regularly to say, yeah, how do you think things are going? Does anything need to change? And I think that's why we missed a trick. Now, in fact, this ends up having a happy ending. In as much as what happened was, there was one Sunday where we do a thing where all of the kids 3 to 10 all gather together and have some singing at the beginning and then divide up into their groups. And in that section, there was somebody working with Tim, and the two of them then began to... The leader asked Tim whether he would come and help because he had to get something ready. And off they went to start sort of arranging the tables for the group that he was looking after. And it was like a sort of light bulb. Suddenly the penny dropped. Here's what we could do. Make him an assistant leader. Give him a role each week in setting up, organising, and that was transformative. Suddenly, he was important, he was involved, he had a function, there was a reason to be there, he stopped being disruptive, he would sit and listen, and then he would help with, you know, the activities, he would do his little tasks, and that was what that was about a year ago. And, you know, he and his mum have been consistent with us ever since. Yeah, and it's just that sort of lateral thinking that was, you know, that was just sort of key. I want to say, yeah, in the business of, yeah, here is church, and a family arrives with a child with special needs, and the question is the church going to flex? You know, in other words, this business of involvement, you know, is it that, you know, look, we're church and we will do our best to find some sort of provision from within our resources to provide for your child, but actually we're still just the church we were before. Do you know what I mean? Now, actually, when somebody arrives, the church changes. And you think about my examples there. Rich businessman arrives, oh, church changes. You know, there's lots of money around suddenly. You know, gifted guitarist, an expert in holiday clubs, a computer expert. Church changes as a result of that person, you know, becoming a part of the body. But would it occur to us to say, you know, when a family with a child with special needs arrives, church should change. Church should no longer be the same. You know, it evolves into a new body of Christ as a result of this arrival. But I'm not sure that I would have thought about that until I really stopped and thought about it. So think laterally. I'm just going to give you a few and then we'll do some questions. There's a lovely story in here of the way that the pastor gave their boy with Down syndrome the weekly task of providing the glass of water that sat next to the lectern for the pastor to drink. And there's an even lovelier story of the occasion where the boy was in a strop and he hadn't done it, and his parents said, you know, Timmy, the glass of water. Timmy, get the glass of water. So off he went, stomped, glass. And on the way home, they said, Timmy, well done for getting the glass of water. Did really well, well done. And he said, hot water. It's just sort of bath, and they were sort of boiling. I mean, and they were relieved to find that he did just get it out of the hot tap. It wasn't actually That's great. So, but yeah, that idea of saying, you know, finding a way of giving a child a task, I thought that was just brilliant. But we just got to have the imagination to think of that sort of thing. What about reverse inclusion? Yeah, supposing you have had to, you know, as with Ellie, I mean, this is a new idea to me. What about reverse inclusion? So that having realised that you've got to manage a child with special needs separately, take some of the children from their peer group out to that group on a sort of rota basis, you know, a couple of them each week, go and join the child. Getting older children to help with special needs of younger children, giving them a sense of what it feels like to give grace. One of your small groups, one of your home groups, give them a focus to care for or to develop a strategy to think how they could be a resource base, an ideas base for your special needs ministry. Develop some expertise, develop a passion for it, and they become, you know, the group. Stephanie Hubeck, how do you pronounce that? Gives a lovely example of, yeah, with some of their families with really severe special needs, they have a sort of, I can't remember what the title is, but some sort of a support family or a family, but it's a sort of buddy system where this family channels resources and acts as the sort of the point person to get resources to this to a particular family with a high level of special needs. Yeah, and is that what they were called? I tried to look it up online. I couldn't remember. Fab clubs, are they still running? Do I mean fab clubs? Physically disabled and able-bodied. Is that what they're called? Do you have vague memories of that? Yeah, no, it's interesting. I remember them as well. But so the idea simply being, you know, that you create a social setting in which physically disabled, and it could be special needs disabled, it could be learning difficulty disabled, join with children who don't have those disabilities, just to bring them together, just as part of a sort of, you know, peer group. Relationship building exercise. It would be a great thing if a church did that. Oh, we're going to hear from you, aren't we? Disruption, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder. I loved that. What is disruption and what is actually part of the rich life of a church? There's a lovely example in here. I haven't got time to read it to you. And more than just Sundays, I realised as I was thinking about this how much, you know, we tend to zero in on that provision for Sundays, and of course you want to say church is more than Sundays. So how do these things get replicated in the business of the rest of church life? You know, would we think, you know, we're running a church garden party? Do we think how will we make it easy for the children, for families with children with special needs, to come to the garden party, to be a part of the I don't know what do you do? Harvest supper, church day out. You know, do we always remember to think, you know, add in provision for them? What do you want to do? I've got some more random reflections, or you could throw some comments or questions we could hear from over there. Perhaps we should hear from over there. Have you got particular insights you want to share? This is getting recorded, isn't it? So if you've got, because you've truly got much better things to say than I have.
A group of mothers at the church who have children, well, a few of them have children with special needs who are now teenagers or getting older, aware of, well, saying how little, there was nothing for them when their children were much younger. So they've started a group called the Challenge Group, and it's really for the mums rather than for the kids, isn't it?
It's a fascinating thing that it's a fascinating thing that they've done, actually, because they've basically created a sort of a drop-in. So it's a kind of combination of outreach and in just addressing some of the needs. And one mother in particular has got a child who's the same age as my daughter. She's 8, I think, and it's taken her a long time to come to terms with the fact that her daughter has special needs, but she has. Yeah. And it's incredibly humbling, and she's just taken that ball and run with it. So she's created this thing where actually she now, there are posters wherever you go around in Haringey inviting parents to drop in on a Friday to bring their children for a break, just for a sort of respite. But they're in the same room with their children, but they get their massages and it's just really quite an extraordinary thing that they're doing, and it's small. But I suspect it will grow, and it's a great witness, and it's a great witness to us in the church who work with children, and have actually, quite frankly, done nothing but wrestle with the issue and periodically try to talk to special needs teachers, etc. So they've done that, and then there's a knock-on thing of some of these parents who also acknowledge the fact that there is nothing for children who then become teenagers who are still, you know, special needs, and they've created something called WAVE, haven't they? Mm. Which is, we're all valued equally. And they are pushing to sort of work out how that will then knock on for young adults who you know, are still part of the community and still need to feel included. So we can't give you great insights, but we can only tell you that, you know, sometimes when you get parents or you get people who have these things, they make extraordinary things happen. Mm. And it's well worth trying to capture that expertise and experience within church family life.
Well, you got something different.
I guess it's really hard to summate it very quickly, but about 5 years ago, through a whole lot of experiences in my life, we set up a group for those suffering with ME and CFS. It's a difficult for even doctors to diagnose, although they say something like 32,000 people die of it every year. One in 64 kids in the UK has it. So we know it's a big issue. And the big problem is isolation, so we wanted to provide pastoral opportunities for them to get together and socialise. And that was the main element, although we are working alongside people like the NHS and various charities who deal with multiple sclerosis, which is like a more radical form of ME. And the idea was just simply to provide an opportunity for people to get together and discuss and share their experiences, and to provide resources and to provide a nice place where they could perhaps live some of their life. Both my goddaughters have ME, so I kind of have some inside. And one of them only is in a wheelchair and gets 40 minutes a day to live her entire life. So she has to eat and they do everything in that. She's too tired, too fatigued the rest of the time. So I wanted just to provide a place. But we found what we needed to provide was something like, we have provided a Facebook group, because just so much of the time they aren't able to be with us. And when I moved from Billericay about 2 years ago to my current church, or perhaps actually it's less than that, it's last April, to my church, we moved it from one city to another, which was only sort of a matter of 10 miles up the road, but it's an entirely different culture. And I think, as far as I know, there's another group for about 25 miles radius serving that purpose. And we work alongside other charities who sort of sit around us and do other things for Down syndrome, for physically disabled, for multiple sclerosis, for a whole set of them, which sort of work next to each other, and we work together. And then we just found the membership sort of increasing, and it's, and then when they get too old to be involved, which our cutoff's 25, we then provide them an opportunity to become a leader, but that's a leader in name. They don't actually have to do any work or anything else. It's just a way of us sort of keeping hold of them and letting them still be involved.
Thank you. Hugely encouraging. I think we underestimate the extent to which, you know, our churches are some of the few places where there is any community left, and that we can tap into that community. And I think that we would find our churches much more enthusiastic about doing some of these things than we would anticipate. You know, that you know, we think, oh, people are too busy. Actually, I think there is an enthusiasm. You know, people can see that this would be a good thing to do, and they would love to do it. Just They're all. I think that this couple, I asked them to give some reflections, and they came up with some random reflections. And they said that they felt that the individuals in our church with special needs, some children, some adults, teach us, God's people, and change and shape us far more than we ever give to them. So, to the question, how much resources do we pour in? I think extravagantly would be my answer. Now, I feel nervous saying that because I've got a child with special needs, but actually, I think I've become convinced that as we give, so we receive far more back. And I think a church that just sort of lavishes grace at a point of need will find blessing in doing so. And I think we shouldn't be frightened of saying some of our best leaders may be given to this work, even though it means, others with less need sort of getting a poorer provision. I'm just trying to remember if there's any of these I really want to... No, I don't think any of those particularly. Children with special needs growing to adults with special needs. We've got a lovely man called Jeffrey who was brought into the church community by extravagant love by two members of our church who met him on a rambling club. And he arrived. He's sort of mild autism. I don't know where he sits on the spectrum, but certainly at the autistic end of the spectrum. And to see him blossom over 3-4 years now, as a church has learnt to love him and all his oddness and his sort of saying the same things over and over again, and to arrive at the point where we baptized him and he gave his testimony, you could have cut the atmosphere with a knife. It was just electric to arrive at that point. But the investment of time that made that possible, sacrificially by those two friends, was huge. And now we're finding ways of involving him. So he has one of these odd autistic gifts in that he can draw with incredible detail. So he produced some sort of sketches of our proposed building project, which were brilliant. I mean, fantastically brilliant. So, finding something that he could do and contribute. And he's on the tea and coffee rota, and he always produces the best biscuits of everybody when he does that. Yeah, those sort of little ways of involving, he's taught us much more about what it means to be givers of grace and what the gospel's about than we would ever have realised, I think. Okay, it's 25 past. Are there any of those that we didn't answer that people are going to be cross because we've not tackled them? I'm not sure I've got anything to say about materials. I just don't know. I think they have to be tailored. Yeah, Gondo.
Are there any good agencies that people have found helpful to work with in terms of information? I was thinking on medical safety things. Where do you use the sources for information on these things?
My advice would be go via the parents. I think go first to the parents, because they will have had to grapple with these issues. They will have had to produce emergency protocols for respite care and all the rest. So go there first, or they will pass. They will be able to give you resources. Perhaps go to special schools. You might not want to go to the special school of the child because that'll produce some confidentiality sort of issues possibly. But go to another special school and get advice. Have you got any suggestions?
Well, I mean, probably most people have heard of Through the Roof.
I haven't.
Through the Roof.
Through the roof.
called Through the Roof for the obvious reasons of the paralytic load through the roof. I think it's broader than the learning difficulties, but they, yeah, they produce a lot of good help. I don't want to be any specific on that, but I have no idea what their website is, but I'm sure if you Google it, you'll find it.
Okay.
Is it a group called Prospects?
Yes.
That's
I think that's
they did learn, I thought
yeah.
They just set up a group, and I'd just say come up and do some training and help you establish, I think,
yeah.
a group within your church.
Yeah, Prospects or Causeway Prospects, is that
yes,
what they
yeah,
used to be called?
Yeah.
Causeway.
Causeway.
Causeway, yeah,
Causeway.
As in
yeah.
Giants. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant, thank you.
Sorry, Autistic Society is great for autism issues. They are brilliant, they're on the way there. Just AYME or CFS and ME. StabilityNet for anybody to do with ICT, and there's a couple others. Kids Inspire, which is a fantastic, beautiful organisation that just deals with any children suffering and trying to give them a bit of escape from growing up and just travel around.
Can I make one other point, which is just it never ceases to amaze me how God provides. We shouldn't be amazed how God provides, but he does. You know, the times where we have felt, sorry, I don't mean me and my wife, but we as a children's group have thought, yeah, this child does need one-to-one or almost one-to-one support. Or, you know, people have come out of the woodwork, God has provided. You know, guys who are speech therapists or special needs teachers or special needs advisors, or just, as you say, people who just have a gift. And a heart and a passion for helping them, and they've been able to help and just been incredibly faithful.
Have you any other particular observations from your...
My only other observation as a parent of two kids with Down syndrome is that is the flip side of all this, which is often people say, should we be expecting them to sit down when we do the Bible talk? Yes, of course, sit them down. You know, there's almost a kind of belief that you can't ask them to do anything because they've got Down syndrome. And the trouble with Down syndrome is really obvious. It's a big kind of, it's written all over their face, literally. So that's just quite interesting. So, yeah, of course, do so. Yeah, absolutely, insist. See how strict we are at home with them. Yeah, just carry on, yeah.
That's communication again, though, isn't it?
Totally,
for us,
yeah.
we do need, I mean, I just think we do need to speak to parents, don't we?
Yeah.
We need to speak to parents,
yeah.
We need to understand what these kids are like at school, see if we can talk to their teachers. Because
yeah.
even if we have special needs teachers in our congregation, they're still going to say to us, I can't necessarily help the child or tell you how to do that unless I know and come and spend time.
And I think to recognise that it's ongoing and dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, we've arrived at something that's working for Daniel at the moment.
Yeah.
But if we sort of, you know, relax, then, you know, it'll soon spin out of control. You've got to, you know, got to be really flexible and really quick to respond to change. It's 5:30, we've got to go. Oh, sorry.
Just one comment. I had a long chat to Andy yesterday about his family, and one of the most helpful things that I picked up from what he was saying, he has two daughters with Downs and how utterly different the two of them are. And therefore not to assume, oh yes, I understand Downs.
Yes.
But actually, you know, and I'm sure that applies to all other special needs as well. Let's not make an assumption that, oh yes, I know what someone's like, they're autistic because I have an autistic child in my group before. That sort of thing.
Shall I lead us in a quick prayer and then we'll finish? We praise you for, just as Andy's been saying, the way that you have provided for in the churches that we represent in very rich and wonderful ways for children, young people with special needs. Thank you. Thank you for that expression of gospel heartedness worked out in the life of the church. And we pray, Father, where we are, where we're missing opportunities to exhibit the love of Christ, that you would alert us and use some of the ideas that we've bounced around today to get us to fresh ways of caring for children with special needs in our congregations, in our communities, and use it to bring glory to Christ. Use it for the maturing of the body, we pray. Amen.